Blog Talk Radio.
Programs on the Frontier Beyond Fear. We actually have three programs this week. And today I am really happy to be bringing on the program Jonathan Womack. Now, Jonathan is the author of several novels, and he is the recipient of the 2013 Hollywood Book Festival Award for his visionary novel, A Cry for a Hero. This is a very timely program this week because his book, A Cry for a Hero, actually was somewhat prophetic in nature because it was written before September 11th, 2001, and deals with issues surrounding terrorism and heroism in a very innovative spiritual way. Now, Jonathan's own path is highly spiritual. His path is reflected in all of his writing, and I'm sure we'll talk about more than one of his books. Jonathan is also the publisher at Womack Publishing Group, and it's currently in its 10th year, with 800 authors and 1,000 titles. And he also works for Harvard University's Graduate School of Education. Jonathan has appeared on multiple broadcasts over the years. He lectures often about his out-of-body experiences and is very open and honest about his own spiritual journey and how that is reflected in his life and in his books. His website is jonathanwomack.com, and if you're on the Blog Talk Radio page anyway, you will see that it is on the page so that you can look up all of the different things that he is involved in. Today, I am going to open up a chat room here in a moment. We had a couple of, Blog Talk Radio was kind of had a little blip a little bit ago, and it's back doing just fine. And I'm going to get that chat room up if anyone would like to talk in the chat about today's show. We also have a call-in number if you have a question for Jonathan, and that number is 310-807-5104. And once the chat is up, I welcome comments and questions. And what I will say is that you might have to go to the on-air page of Blog Talk Radio and click on the Susan Laris and Dan's chat room to get in there. That's if you're listening live. If you're listening in the future to the podcast, we do welcome comments and questions on the show page, just like a blog. And I really want to invite people to do that because I think many of the guests would welcome that and would be happy to answer some questions that come up later. So with all of that said, lots of logistical information today, let me say that I'm very happy to be bringing Jonathan Womack on the show. Hello, John. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Susan. Thank you for that nice introduction.
Well, it's really nice to have you here. And as we're talking here, I am going to go ahead and bring up that chat. And so What I'd like to start this with is just how, John, did you come to write this book, A Cry for a Hero, so long ago in such a visionary way? I wonder if you could reflect on that a little bit as to how it came to be.
Yeah, sure. I'm pretty in tune with the collective consciousness at this point. It's like a fog surrounding the earth, and it consists of all the thought energy of the people on the earth. And, you know, this collective consciousness, it's kind of like your aura and your body. They both interact with each other and can affect one another. I felt the attack coming to our country. I thought they were coming to Boston, so that's where I set the story. And I felt them coming, and you know, the book was, I thought, might be kind of a wake up call, or and it was time to write it. I got the nod from my spirit guide.
Yes.
I'm pretty in tune with him as well. So I had waited some years to write this. I had thought about it in the early 80s. And, you know, when it got closer, it was 1999 when I realized, okay, I got to start writing now because the attack is going to be coming soon. The time
wow.
is coming. So, yeah, I was nearing the end of the book, actually. I'd been researching Osama for a couple of years. And, you know, I was just really into that predator mindset as I wrote the villain. And that morning, 9/11, I got a call. I was heading into Boston to work at a medical conference at the Prudential Center. And, you know, anybody that knows Boston, the Prudential's either the tallest or second tallest building in town. Kind of reminiscent of the Twin Towers. And so anyway, I'm driving in there, and I get a call from my girlfriend, and she says, happy birthday, honey. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And she said something terrible has happened. And I knew by the way she said it that, they were here, and she told me what happened. And, you know, of course, I got to the Prudential Center, and they had canceled the medical convention because all the doctors were immediately detoured to New York.
Oh, yes,
and,
I guess so.
Yeah, the rest of us were sitting around wondering if, the next plane was going to come into the Prudential Center.
Nobody knew that day. Yeah, nobody knew what would happen that day. I remember that vividly myself.
Yeah.
You had
absolutely.
No way of knowing, really, although in a way you had some inkling ahead of time, which is amazing. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I felt that the time was very much a mirror of World War II.
Yeah.
And, you know, Superman came out of that because people, you know, the collective consciousness looks for heroes when we are attacked like that. And I saw the same situation going on today. We're vulnerable to attack. We got these people that mean us harm. A lot of young folks have not been taught the history of World War II, so our culture tends to forget, and then we get complacent, and then boom. And so my hero was born out of, you know, this 9/11. Just I compare him in a lot of ways to Superman. And he was sort of born out of a need for a hero, and he's kind of a hero for the new millennium because, you know, he goes out of body instead of going into the phone booth.
Right. Yeah, he's a highly spiritual hero.
Although,
he sure
is.
Superman had some spiritual aspects to him, too, I guess. I always am not quite as direct, but you feel like there's always been this aura around any of our superheroes that it goes beyond the physical and even the superhuman strength. I have felt that myself in the past.
Yeah, if Superman was real and some of these superheroes, I think in reality you would feel that something was different about this person if you were standing next to them in a line at the bank or something. You'd be like, wow, I'm getting all this energy from this person, or what is this, you know, what's going on? But you would notice something. because they're extraordinary in that way, yes.
I wonder if you could reflect a little bit more on the role that superheroes play for all of us and how they do come to light during times of crisis, but what really is their purpose in our culture, do you feel?
Well, I think they're meant to inspire and lead and promote the goodness of the human race, because there's certainly a lot of bad aspects and bad people and a lot of good people. And for me, I was growing up, I was a little skinny kid all through up through high school, and I got bullied a lot. So when I was seven, you know, I had started reading Superman comics. And in 1966, a cartoon came out from a company called Filmation. The cartoon was The New Adventures of Superman. And every Saturday morning, they had a half-hour show with two Superman cartoons, and then they'd have a cartoon of Superboy and Krypto in there. And
yeah,
I had been going out of body for a while and couldn't tell anybody, and just felt very isolated and thought I was the only one on the planet that went out of body. And so I'm watching this Superboy, and I just relate to this character because, you know, he's a little older than me, and, you know, he can fly like me, and even though he's fictional, I'm like, hey, that's me. You know, so I really identified.
Yeah.
And in fact, when I would go out of body, I started taking that shape of Superboy, you know, with my face, but his body, because you can take any form in the spirit world, you know, an orb or whatever. So, I'd turn into Superboy, and, you know, I'd basically do these sort of superhero things on the other side, like helping people find their way to the light.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I've been called into Earth's past to help someone. I've been called into the future, the present, of course. So I'm sort of a spiritual superhero, I guess, for lack of a better description. But that's how this all came to be. And then, you know, it was the 80s when I thought about writing, you know, sharing my experiences, and I thought, you know, people are going to think I'm crazy if I start talking about Superboy and Superman, you know, but, so I thought, well, it'd be cool to write, you know, this spectacular story with this out-of-body superhero, and you can do all these cool things, and bad guys. So that idea lingered until 1999 when, you know, my spirit guide said, hey, it's time, because they're going to be coming soon. You need to write this book now. And so I sat down. Wasn't sure about exactly the story, how it was going to all go down, but I knew I wanted to start it with my experience that started for me when I had to play dead to survive this terrifying encounter. And I said in my mind, you know, be dead, don't breathe, don't move, just be dead. And it worked, except, you know, when I got up, I saw somebody lying on the ground and realized, holy crap, that's me. And I looked at my hands and, you know, I'm a luminescent ghost. I'm going, uh-oh, this is death. I'm out of my body. This is bad. I am dead. Oh, boy. So, yeah, there was that panic. But when the panic passed, the curiosity kicked in, and I took off into the wild blue yonder, and I've never looked back. So I incorporated experiences into each of my books without being too preachy or any of that kind of stuff. I just sort of, I couch it in there without being in your face, and just to give people some food for thought. And, you know, maybe if I reach a few people and affect them in a positive way, then my job is done.
Yeah, well, that's what it means to inspire. And I will say that even in my own experience and in observing some of the work of others as well, sometimes it's much easier to express these concepts through fiction. It really, people might not pick up a nonfiction book on some of these concepts, and yet if they pick up fiction, it just resonates with their consciousness. I was just talking today, for example, about Star Wars with somebody. That was one of my first experiences of some higher spiritual truths. And many of us, we were exposed to some things through Star Wars. And it really played an important role. And I think of these kids today, a lot of kids today are really into gaming, really into fantasy. Even at my age, there was a little bit of fantasy role-playing going on. A lot of them are getting back into, like, the card games, or they're into comics. And when I think about why the Hollywood Book Festival would have chosen your book, it seems to capture a lot of those elements that inspire people right now. And I could see one thing I didn't explain, and I probably should, is that what the Hollywood Film Festival honors is they look for novels that have great potential for film, television, gaming, and multimedia. That's the purpose. And I can really see how they would select your novel, because we all have this yearning for higher truths, and yet many people may not be ready to just walk right into them in a nonfiction way. Fiction is approachable and safer to them.
Absolutely. I mean, you'll have the crowd that'll read my book as a entertaining superhero adventure, and others who will get more spirituality out of it. Like I was saying, one guy, he commented on the book, and he asked me about, what was this spirit guide over the superhero's shoulder? He didn't understand what that was, and I was surprised to hear that, because to me it's pretty clear and evident. And I thought I explained it enough without being too preachy or anything, but I think, and people that aren't real spiritual will probably, some of the spirituality will just kind of go over their head and they'll be entertained. But other people, I know, because book signings and talks and so forth, I'll get people who say, hey, I was reading that part and it triggered a memory I was a kid, I forgot all about it. I was in bed, I was bouncing off the ceiling, I looked down, I was in bed, and I didn't know what was going on, and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I got a lot of that. So it does resonate with people that have a higher sort of awareness. And
I wonder sometimes, John, if I'll tell you a little story about something that happened to me some years ago. I was talking to someone who is not in any way even really exposed much to what you would call New Age philosophy, just loosely using that title, or Eastern, or, the concept of an OBE would have been foreign to this person. And this person perfectly described an OBE, and then asked me, just, out of the blue, has anything like that ever happened to you? It was sort of like, having seen a ghost or something, that just says, and it was a perfect description, where this person was projecting out over the city, could actually see people, could see things going on, and it took me by surprise, honestly, because it wasn't a question I would have expected. And even on my path back then, I didn't have a radio show, I wasn't openly writing about any of this stuff, and I will never forget it, John, because I just thought, now here is such an interesting bit of evidence, in a way, that here's just someone who, nobody's ever told them about it. They weren't just imagining, or, what the skeptics might say, it's wishful thinking, you think whatever. This person knew nothing of that and might have even been afraid of it, and yet wasn't, because you would have, this path that this person, that was a conservative Christian. And you would have think maybe this would be scary even to this person. But no, it wasn't scary to the person. It was just very matter of fact that, oh, you know, this is just something that happens. And I was just so astonished later when I think about it, that how this is the way it should be, in a way, is that we don't have to be afraid of some of these things. And some of us just seem to have a natural ability. And I will tell you, this person had much more of a natural ability than I have ever exhibited. I mean, certainly when I was young or anything. And I wonder, do you feel that some people, maybe because of a past life or just how they come into this world, some people just are more naturally inclined to be able to do this, even if they have no idea what it is they're doing, how, you know, it just happens?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Souls mature with each life lived. You know, reincarnation is the system and that's in place, and we cycle through as man and woman. And each time we cycle through, hopefully we get a little bit wiser and smarter and more spiritually developed, and we learn from our sacrifices and losses and our triumphs, and we get a little shinier as souls. You know, we start out as, we're born in the spirit world as a baby soul, and we really don't know anything. We know unconditional love because our spirit guides are going to be with us throughout our sojourn. You know, if you're here 5,000, 10,000 lives, they're at your back the whole time. They never leave your side, essentially.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so we start out these dirty gray snowballs of consciousness, and then we cycle through here and we evolve, and eventually we turn into these spirit guides. They are graduates, and at some point we will graduate from Earth too, and when we do, we're going to be these brilliant white suns of love and joy that these beings exude, and wisdom and all that. They're very godlike, and they're mistaken a lot by people as being God, but they're actually, they're not God. God is something even, it's hard to imagine, but he's something much far beyond these spirit guides. It's pretty interesting how it all works, and, you know, when you're over there, it all makes perfect sense. And some of the things you have to agree to when you come to Earth is to forget all past life, all memory of past lives. And you, you know, they give you a few choices of life situations. You know, your sex, male or female, what time period you're going to be in. And this is all according to your own personal goals and what you want to accomplish in your next life. And they'll give you a few choices, so you pick, you know, I picked a guy in Indiana in, you know, 20th century. I think my goal was to, you know, raise awareness about the spirit world.
Yeah.
We come here with these goals, and they'll show us our death, too. And that's another thing we have to agree to. Is okay. Of course, you're gonna forget that you agreed to your life and your death when you come here, and you know, you're a baby getting the doctor slapping you on the butt and you're crying. You've forgotten everything, and now you're in this space-time world going, what the hell did I just agree to? I want to go back.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking. What about picking your parents? I've heard that said that you actually have some say into who you will be born to. Have you heard that, or how do you feel about that?
Absolutely, yes. That's one of the criteria. It'll be your parents, like I said, your sex, male or female. You know, you can be gay if you want. That's a way to speed up the process. There's some souls are in a hurry. And there's a few ways to speed up this long, long journey that you're on. And if souls get in a hurry, they're offered an option. They can be like a woman in a man's body or vice versa. And that's because they're just going to experience more flack from society, and the experience is more intense, and thereby you evolve a little quicker. That's kind of the process behind that. But yeah, you pick your parents too. Dr. Michael Newton's books, Life Between Lives, he's got 40 case studies of people that he regressed, hypnotized, and went into their past life and, you know, between lives. And, you know, one of the cases there, the guy's talking about, he's recalling selecting his next life, and he wanted to bring music to the world. And so his parents are, you know, middle-class parents in New York, and they'd be able to get him to, like, Juilliard or get him some training. So it's that kind of thing where they will set you up with a good chance of success. Because, of course,
yes,
your spirit guides want you to succeed. And so they set you up, and then it's up to you. You have the free will. And they block your memory of past lives because that affects your current life. And sometimes it affects it in a bad way, because if you remember your past transgressions, we've all committed some horrific acts to get where we are. None of us are perfect, you know, and we all started out young souls. So, some souls will get so despondent from past lives that it affects their current life, and it prevents them from focusing on their current mission and so forth. So the spirit guides decided it was better to block all previous memory. Of course, when you die and you go back to the spirit world, you will remember, and all your memory comes back, and you're like, oh yeah, I got that. Okay,
yeah,
I remember now.
Yeah, it's suddenly all there, I guess. It's just like waking up, I guess, from being asleep.
Uh-huh.
How do you view karma, John? Because I know there's actually a new book out. I know that they're talking a lot about the absolute law of karma, that it's just immutable. And I'm really curious what you think about karma with respect to reincarnation. I wonder if you could explore that a little bit.
Yeah, karma is the rule of the universe, and you live and die by it. You have to conduct, you know, I try to conduct my life. Karma's always on my mind, and
mm-hmm.
you know, if you hurt somebody, you are going to have to experience that person's pain from their perspective. So let's say I murder, I rape a woman tomorrow and kill her. My next life might be in 6th century France as a woman, and at age 21, my spirit guide tells me you will be raped and murdered so that you can experience the fear and pain that you caused the woman you murdered in your previous life. And the spirit guides will even get you to agree to living. Yeah, they'll say, okay, all right, I'll be a woman in 6th century France, fine, and I'm going to be raped and murdered brutally and perfectly, okay. And that's how it goes. So when people wonder about why do good things happen, bad things happen to good people, there's a number of reasons, but it's all karmic related. If I see a homeless person on the street, which there are a number around here, I'm at Harvard University now. Some of them are old souls, and they've come down. It might be their last time around here. You get these last timers. They've learned about everything there is. They've come to Earth for the very last time before they graduate. And they might come as a homeless person to affect, you know, some lawyer walking down the street. And they'll meet eyes, and the lawyer is affected and changed, and he becomes a philanthropist and gives all his money to charity and that kind of thing. Some of the homeless people might be, they're doing the bad karma thing. They killed somebody, or they did something in their previous life, and now, because of it, they're homeless and suffering. And so you never know for sure what the karmic reason is, but it's definitely karma that is running, that's running the show, and your spirit guides are all managing that. And you know, like your death, you forget your, you agree to your death, but then you have to forget it. And you know, what they found was if you know what, how you're going to die, oh, I'm going to die in a crossing the street tomorrow, you'll stay home. You won't go out anywhere. And that's not right. You agreed to your death. So the spirit guy's, no, you got to go to the street. Come on. You got to cross. Yeah, go on. And you're like, okay. And you get hit by the car and then you're dead. Huh. Yeah, most souls will back out of the contract. You know, if
now,
they remember,
I've heard some
they'll
people
be, oh, no,
say
I'm
can,
not going to cross.
You can
the
change
street
it.
Today, so.
There are people who say that you can change the contract. This is a pretty complex topic actually, because I know I've heard that you can change the contract. I've also speculated about whether sometimes, like say, well, I can think of an example of someone who was on the show, Daniel Brinkley. When he was young, he told me he was a violent bully. He was probably like the kind of bully who would have beaten you up years ago.
Okay.
And by the way, I always hung out with the geek crowd in high school. So although the girls were pretty much immune, I observed my share of that kind of thing. We were all Trekkies reading fantasy novels. But anyway, he was a bully when he was younger. And then he died. He had one of the most well-publicized NDEs. He got hit by lightning and had a bestseller. And he had a life review, which made him review what it felt like from the perspective of those who were bullied, just like what you're talking about. And yet in this life, he seemed to, I mean, he changed. I mean, it totally changed him because he had this NDE, and now he's like this beacon of light. I mean, he's won the distinguished award, the presidential award, because he runs this giant charitable foundation. I mean, he does all this stuff. So when you look at something like that, of course, he had an NDE. That's a little bit different. He actually was clinically dead. Did he then somehow fix the damage that he did when he was young within a single life, is I wonder
yes.
about. And how often can that happen, I wonder?
Oh, all the time. I mean, the karma doesn't have to be something you did in a previous life. It could be something you did yesterday in this
yeah.
life. Yeah, so that's going on too. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really tough to live your life by karma and be perfect. It's a
well,
tough
definitely.
Road. Yeah. So,
go ahead. Talk about NDEs a little bit, and then I want to talk to you about soul groups reincarnating too, and soul family,
Over.
That concept.
Yeah, soul birth. Well, the NDE, that's the same thing as, you know, out-of-body experience. You're putting your body into a trance or sleep paralysis, they call it. And it happens every night when you go to sleep and you're dreaming. Your body automatically goes into sleep paralysis so that you don't dream that you're running across out into traffic and then your body gets up and you know, actually runs outside in the traffic. Your body shuts down your limbs and you can't, you know, you're paralyzed and that's for
right.
your own safety. And
right.
that's when you can go into, you know, slow down your heart and your breathing and you get to that paralysis point and then you can just get out of yourself. So, yeah, the NDEs and the OBEs are the same thing. The NDEs tend to be more like, they go out of body and they see the light at the end of the tunnel and they go see their spirit guide and they usually get a message or something and they'll come back. Whereas the out of body thing is more like you can just control it and it, you know, do what it will and it happens somewhat regular and the experiences are longer or like with me, I would visit the here and now or I might go to other realms. There's many other planes of existence, and it seems like there's even other universes just parallel to ours with all these other people living, you know, a little different ways, and everything's a little different but kind of the same. So creation's pretty vast.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, no, no question.
You mentioned soul birth.
Soul groups and soul families. That's yet where people come back in groups and do, you know, accomplish things together or work out. I imagine karma can often be worked out that way too.
Yes, I love seeing that. Like there was a show on reincarnation where this woman from Australia went to England, and she goes to this house and she says, "I'm your mother," to this family that lost her. She's like, "I'm your mother, and you know, I remember this house," because she had been reborn and now she's like a young woman kind of thing, and she says, "I remember inside this wall, you know, we did this construction back in the 60s, and, you know, we covered this wall, and there's this thing by it," and so they opened the wall, and sure enough, there it is, and the family came to realize that, holy cow, this woman is our mother. It's the mm-hmm. soul of our mother in another body, and they all embraced her, and it's pretty cool, and that's what's happening, is you might be reincarnated in a different time, but you might be reincarnated the next day, you know, and you're born, and so, like she was reincarnated right away, and she was able to track down her family, so that's pretty cool.
No, that's amazing.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stories like that. I think it's becoming more accepted and mainstream and understood by people. And
it seems there's a need for that. I will say that I tend to come, although over time I become more open to many things, I love it when I see evidence. I love it when I can convey evidence just to help convey some truths. I think that we're starting to see more evidence of reincarnation. I had a personal experience, which maybe I can relay really fast, is I had this experience where I totally ran, absolutely randomly through just, I can't even explain, well, I could, but it's a long story, how I randomly stumbled on this painting, which I felt, it was like, wow, that kind of looks like me. And I thought, who painted this thing? And so I looked, and I actually didn't really know the artist because it wasn't someone I knew, not someone that famous, although if you're into art, you might know. And I looked up the person, and it turned out it was my boyfriend at the time. Looked just like him. I looked just like him in that life in the 19th century. And so this then led to my researching this, and I began to find, and I haven't really done much with this. This is something, I'm not afraid to talk about it, but I haven't done much with it. I ended up going to a reincarnation conference because I wanted to better understand this, because the more I looked at these people, and they were in England, and unless you're into art, you may not really even know who they are, I started to find more people in the circle. And in some cases, there were amazing parallels. Like one guy I know who's actually been on the show is a photographer hobbyist in this life and was one of the first photographers in that life. And there's a picture that looks just so much like him. And I went through a challenging thing. The person that I kind of look like, it's not exact. I mean, you have to go all the way back to high school. But I finally found a high school picture because she was young. She died young. She's said to have committed suicide and had a really tragic life. And I struggled with that so much at first. I first of all, didn't want to accept that maybe this person had been me. To this day, I sometimes still question it, even though I've seen a lot of evidence. But there were all these little things, like her favorite song was the song I always played on the piano when I was a kid. And I don't remember anything if it was me. But in any case, I discovered that there are other people who have been stumbling on this kind of thing, where when I went to this conference, they too have found photographic parallels. And it's not really in the mainstream. even though it's amazing. I don't know why people don't want to really accept it. And maybe someday I will tell my story more. And I have thought about doing that. And like I said, I'm not afraid to mention it right here. But I'm not alone, I guess I'm saying. And I guess what was so believable to me is I had never heard of any of these people. The person that I have a parallel to, potentially, I have never heard of in my life. I mean, she is just this pretty, you know, on Wikipedia nowadays, you can find lots of people. And if you're into art, you may know who she is. And that's it. And to me, that was convincing for me, in that I could just stumble on this. I don't remember anything beyond that song. There are sometimes weird parallels, like chairs that look like chairs I have, or dresses or outfits that have parallels. I mean, sort of some weird things. But then I think, well, you know, maybe I'm pushing too far. Anyway, I don't want to go too much into this, but it's been something on my mind, and I know a lot of people think about this, that we're starting to see more evidence. And what will it mean? I mean, what if more of us do begin to know about past lives? How will we deal with that? It is hard if you really think it's a parallel. You really do think about, oh, my, you know, look at this. This person did this. And, you know, it can influence you in a way.
Yeah, there's a wonderful place called the Home of Souls.
Uh-huh.
And it is... A large, I don't know if it has a physical counterpart. I don't know if it's Jupiter or if it's the sun or if it's even the center of the galaxy, because this place is vast. You cannot wrap your mind around it. It's this huge sphere of lights and just different lights and frequencies. And as you approach it, you hear this incredible music, and it's like 1,000 orchestras playing all at once, and it's an amazing chord, and it's playing, and you hear it, and it brings you in, kind of like a plane coming in for a landing, and then you fly into this, like I said, the sun or the center of the galaxy, I don't know where this is, but and then you fly into this vast place, and you're following this signal, and it leads you to your little space within the Home of Souls. And when you get to your space, there's 4 or 5 other souls in there with you, and this is your soul group. And these folks will be with you through most of your incarnations. Sometimes they're not there for a specific reason. Maybe you have to learn loneliness or something, but within your soul group, your soulmate is in there too. This is the one person who you're closest with and you will spend the most lives with and the most time. I haven't found mine yet in this life, so it could be that I'm supposed to, you know, be lonely. But yeah, you will be with these folks, in your lives, like brothers and sisters and that kind of thing. You might be the sister, and then the next life you'll be the younger brother, or, you know, it can flip around, or you might be the mother, and the next time you're the daughter. It's, you know, that's how it works.
You know, you just described, I have to say this to you. By the way, this show is so much a conversation. That's the way it kind of goes, is we just kind of keep going with this. But I just went to a talk by Eben Alexander, who is the neurologist who died. Maybe you heard of him. He's written about it, and he has a lot of credibility because he didn't believe in near-death experiences, and he had one. And it was kind of an OBE, really, because he was in a coma. He wasn't necessarily clinically dead, but his brain was virtually dead. Anyway, I have to tell you this as a confirmation. If you haven't heard it, he told, and I was just at this talk recently, it's got to be a synchronicity, he told a perfect story of what you just said. He heard this beautiful music, John, and it opened up a portal, essentially. He ended up flying into this place that was like this beautiful land, and there was this beautiful girl next to him flying. And this was his NDE, part of this. And later, this is what's so amazing about this story. He was adopted. He had not found his adoptive parents at that time. He later did find them, and they told him, "You had a sister who died." And they gave him the picture of the sister. And remember, he didn't even know who this was, and it was her. It was the girl who was flying with him when he died, and the music opened up this land to him that was like a beautiful, it sounded like a fantasy land, like the wizard, everything was vivid and vibrant, and he did talk to spirit guides there. And remember, this is a neurologist who did not believe in any of this. He to this day is being questioned, you know, "Oh, you were hallucinating." But, you know, how is this even possible? I mean, it's based on his word alone that he saw his sister. I mean, only he knows that he saw his sister without even knowing he had a sister. But you just described it. I mean, you described his experience perfectly. And I had to relate that because it's got to be a synchronicity that I just happened to, you know, hear him talk about it. Not long ago, so it's an amazing area.
Yeah, I've read other people that have been to the Home of Souls. Robert Monroe, for one. Anybody familiar with NDEs and out of body stuff will know the Monroe Institute in Virginia. In fact, I based the superhero in A Cry for a Hero. The superhero I named after Robert Monroe, his initials are R-A-M, Ram.
Yes.
And the character is Jack Ramsey, and his buddies call him Ram. And when he plays dead and finds himself out of his body, and then he finds his terrorist plot and answers the call by transforming into the superhero, he takes the name Ram, and he's got the big R on his chest like Superman and the cape. And I dedicated the first book to Robert Monroe, and the sequel, which comes out next year, is set in Virginia at the Monroe Institute. I call it the Keefe Institute, but it's set there, and folks can go there and be hooked up to, you know, an EKG kind of thing, and many of them have out-of-body experiences, you know, triggered, and it's a pretty cool place.
Yeah.
How
do you view dreams, John? Where do dreams fit into all of this, as well as lucid dreaming?
Yeah, the dreams, it's, of course, different than an out-of-body experience because a dream is from the subconscious, where out-of-body is a normal thing like going to the bathroom, your soul at night. The body is so confining, so your soul, now and then, it just wants to get out and feel some freedom. And while your conscious mind goes to sleep, good night, your soul goes out flying around, and then the next morning you remember you had maybe a dream you were flying. But no, really, you were flying. And the trick is to take your conscious mind with you. So for me, when I lie down and I go into the trance and I feel these vibrations, and, you know, I have to stay awake for this process because a lot of times you just fall asleep and then, you're done. It's all over. But if you stay awake and you can control it and you take your conscious mind and you're out of your body and you're wide awake and you're fully conscious and you're flying. And, yes, it's pretty cool. And you're like, wow, this is great. So then, you know, you go out and experience the here and now and you come back and then, and you remember it all because your conscious mind was awake during the experience. Most people, your soul goes out and you're sleeping soundly and you have no memory of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the dreams are also a way to project yourself onto the astral plane. I would be in a dream and realize I'm dreaming. Maybe I saw something odd and, you know, my mind clicked and went, oh, wait a minute, I'm dreaming. I'm actually not here in New York City. I'm at home in bed.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm here and I'm awake. So that was a way for me to then just, you know, will myself to fly or just fall forward you know.
Yes.
And you can project then onto the astral plane from there and control it and go places and so forth. So it was a little different with me because I had a bedwetting problem when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
So I would hypnotize myself before bed and say, now don't, if you, in your dream, when you have to go to the bathroom, remember you're dreaming and wake up. So sure enough, I have to go to the bathroom and I'm like, wait a minute, hold on now. And I walk in my dream, I walk back to my bedroom and sure enough, there I am lying in bed and I'm standing there looking at myself and you can feel this dual consciousness. You're in two places at the same time. Part of you is still in your body, you know, keeping the brain and the heart beating a couple times a minute, and part of you is standing outside of your body looking at you. It's a funny feeling, to say the least, but, you know, at that point, now that I'm awake in the dream, now I can do whatever I want and go off into the wild blue yonder. So.
Yeah. You know, I've had experiences, and it doesn't happen all the time. Actually, they're pretty scattered over the years, I would say, although there can be some more active times, where I've had some dreams where I do become aware in the dream. I know that it's lucid. I know that I'm in the dream, and I'm now in control in the dream. And then I'm interacting with somebody. Sometimes I've had dreams, one that's really vivid, where I was basically being trained to face a fear. I was afraid of the
ocean.
You're a
spirit guide, it sounds like.
And I definitely was talking to a higher being in the dream, and I said to them, fine, you want me to jump off this cliff into the ocean? I'll do it. In fact, in the dream, my dog ran off the cliff, which, of course, would be a horrifying thing. I actually know somebody that happened to in Oregon. They had a friend had a little dog. They were on a hike, and a dog ran off a cliff. It does happen here because there are a lot of cliffs. And in the dream, you know, that little nightmare scenario played out in the dream, and I said to them, I said, this is a dream. She's not real, and she can be alive down below, and I'm just going to jump right off too because this is, you want me to jump off, I'll do it. And I did. I jumped into the ocean. And I swam in the ocean, which in real life would, you know, there's just, that would be a frightening thing to do.
Yeah.
And so, and that was pretty much the end of that scenario. And I thought later that whatever just happened to me was opening me up in some way. I mean, it had everything to do with facing a fear and also knowing that I was consciously in the dream and that nothing could really hurt me in the dream. And
well,
I'm still thinking about it, what it meant.
Yeah, that's another thing. At night, you know, we go to sleep and our conscious mind, we wake up in the morning and don't really remember anything. But what our souls do on a regular basis is we go out of body and we're on the astral plane with our spirit guide. And we're at class. I mean, we're at school here on Earth. And then at night, we go and be at school too, so they will go over lessons. And that was a good example that you said, because there's so many, you know, fear is a big one, of course. That's maybe the biggest one, but you know, you think about different relationships and the dynamics involved, and so many lessons to learn here. I mean, that's why it takes so long. But at night, yeah, you'll be with your spirit guide, and they'll be running you through some sort of exercise to help you grow and learn and evolve.
Yeah. And I felt that it was as if I was given an awareness of one, because this doesn't happen to me all the time. You know, I can't, like, list 20 times this has happened. It was a pretty remarkable experience. And it was, I believe that they're really, you're right. I mean, and it helps us in real life. I mean, whatever exercises we're going through genuinely assist us with being in the physical.
Yeah, yeah, these beings care. I mean, they love us completely and utterly.
Yeah.
It's an amazing energy, too, if you've ever gone down the the tunnel to the light, you know how amazing it is. And, you know, this radiation they give off, it just goes right through you. And
yeah.
It's like when you're at the Home of Souls. I mean, this, you know, this music is through you and fills you. And then when you're with your spirit guide, that energy is just like, you know, a blazing sun. It's just amazing. In fact, I've tried to get, you know, I always try to get as close as I can. And there's a point where you can't approach your spirit guide anymore because it starts becoming painful and you realize you can't take. Yeah, this is your limit,
like
of what
yearning,
you can take.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to see how, you know, me, I'm like, how much can I take of this joy because it's so amazing? But it's a wonderful and terrible energy at the same time because it's so powerful. And you get to a point where you're like, okay, that's as far as I can go, because if I go any further, it's going to be really painful and I can't handle it and it will hurt me, and this is as close as I can get. But as you get stronger and more evolved, you can handle more of that energy and get a little closer. That's how that works. But boy, they give off some crazy energy.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I know we don't have a lot of time left.
Yeah, we're running out of time on the live show, and I know we'll keep to the schedule as close as we can. I will let you know it won't cut us off completely if we do get right down to the end, which usually we do. I have a tendency to really get engaged in these conversations. But if anyone's listening live and it's about to cut off, I just want to let the live audience know all you have to do is call the teleconference line, which is 310-807-5104. And you can hear, if we go over a minute or so, you'll be able to hear it. Or just listen to the podcast at the end. But yes, John, as we head into the end of this, yes, please do leave us with, you know, whatever you want to convey here at the end. And I will tell you right off that I'm very thankful. Thank you for being on the show. And I've really enjoyed this conversation. This is how I love the show to go, is that we just have a really interesting conversation. This is vintage Frontier Beyond Fear, and I want to just tell you, I appreciate you coming on and being so open talking about these things.
Thanks. I mean, because we are living in the age of 2012, and this is a big time for humankind, and I want people to think about the possibility that there was life in this solar system long ago that was our ancestors, and it was very advanced, and there was a cosmic war, and we had a fall from grace, and now here we are on Earth all these years later. And, you know, we're ready for an upgrade, and 2012 is that opportunity. It'll either turn into a bad thing for mankind, or it will turn into a good thing, depending on how the collective consciousness goes. And my book Old Souls is about this war that took place on Mars and this other world that was destroyed. It's now an asteroid belt that's orbiting between Mars and Jupiter. That planet that was totally destroyed. Mars was, all surface life was just wiped out in the blast, and everything was laid waste. But that information is bound to come out sooner or later, and more people are waking
up. It's coming
out
even now. You know, there have been reports, John, it's interesting, again, a synchronicity. In the last, I would say, couple weeks, I saw a mainstream science report on this very thing, that they're beginning to speculate, and not just, you know, wild speculators like some may call us. Scientists are speculating that life might have begun on Mars. Now, they talk about astrobiology, that maybe, you know, when Mars was destroyed, some, you know, debris fell to Earth, you know, there have been remnants of Mars that have ended up here, and that life was brought on them. But they're starting to open up to this idea, and I find it fascinating. Yeah, we could almost do a whole show on this, because there are people who have studied this, the structures on Mars, even the structures on the moon.
Oh. Oh, the moon too. All they were all over the solar system, especially. I mean, this solar system was engineered, and like the moon Iapetus. If you Google that, you'll see it looks like the Death Star that was put together in two distinct pieces.
I have seen that, and yeah, there are people. I've been to the presentation. And we're in the podcast now, so people, it's still. This is still available to everyone, but I'm not going to hold you too long, or we'll make you late. But in any case, I've heard people like Richard Hoagland talk. He talks a lot about this. I've seen him several times where he's convinced. I mean, that he has evidence of structures on the moon and on Mars, and you know, in a way, it's our own pride, John. I feel like we in this time feel like we have to have been the only civilization that got to this point, and yet that's really not necessarily logical. And you don't have to be a super spiritual person. You can just be logical and think, you know, it's very possible there have been other civilizations in our solar system. It's not beyond the realm of possibility, and there may very well be evidence of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and rise and fall civilizations here on Earth that go way back into history.
Yeah.
You know, our history goes back, you know, it tells us civilization goes back like 10,000 years and all this, and that's pretty ridiculous because there's been many civilizations in different ages in our planet. It's so old, it's hard to grasp the timeline, but yeah.
And there are scientists studying it. I mean, there are two that have been on this show. There's one, her name's Susan Martinez, and I got to get her back on. She's got a PhD in anthropology from Columbia, and she's finding all this evidence of these civilizations. And she also sees that science is being suppressed. She feels that genuine research is being suppressed, and she talked about that, and I'm going to bring her on again. And, you know, another one is Frank Joseph. He's also known by Frank Joseph Hoff, and he's been on Coast to Coast a bunch of times, and he's been on this show, and he's coming back on. He's the guy who studied Atlantis. I mean, real evidence of Atlantis. You know, they've gone and looked at this. And this is not just some fringe. You know, the skeptics, there are those who want to suppress genuine inquiry, genuine understanding of what's actually happening in our world. And if we really want to know the truth, and this is what I say, because I have people who listen to this show who think, oh, you know, Susan's off on her tangent or whatever. This show is about genuine inquiry. And some things may not resonate. And, you know, some things don't necessarily resonate with me. They don't have to, not all of them. This is about having an open mind to what people are reporting and what their experiences are. And there's so much more to the world than conventional wisdom tells us.
That is for sure. That's a profound statement right there.
Well, thank you. And I guess I should give you once again the opportunity to wrap up since you know, we probably should, but I have really appreciated having you on. And maybe you can remind people where they can find you, what you have coming up. I know you have a hard copy version of your book coming out and different things. I'll just give you that chance just here in the final minutes to say anything you'd like to say about your own work and what's coming up.
Sure. Yeah, if people want to learn more, they can go to jonathanwalnack.com. And, of course, the book is A Cry for a Hero. It's this out-of-body superhero ram. And there's an excerpt to the sequel there as well. And, you know, I start most books with harrowing experiences I've had. So I think that'll resonate with a lot of folks. And maybe I'll be on your show again sometime when the next book comes out.
You would be welcome back on.
Thank you.
And, you know, I look forward to seeing, you know, what comes up next for you, because I think you've got a lot of things going on.
I'm going to get my movie, Susan.
Yeah, well, would that be something? Well, you're on your way, John. I mean, with this award, they're looking at you.
They are. So.
Yeah, I think that that is, you know, that's very exciting. So, and
very
by the way, let me say on the show, congratulations, because that's really quite an honor. I mean, it's not that easy to win that award, and obviously it was meant to be. I mean, there's a message that you're sharing in that work that really needs to be heard in the greater world. So congratulations,
yeah.
John, for
if,
that. And
if your listeners go to YouTube and punch in A Cry for a Hero, my acceptance speech comes up. They flew me out to Hollywood there at the Roosevelt Hotel. It was pretty swanky, and it was a wonderful night, and yeah, I'll never forget.
Yeah.
It was great. So thanks for having
me
on the show, Susan.
It must have been a nice affirmation for all the work you've done over the years, because sometimes it requires patience. I know many of us, it's a good example of how we can patiently do our work, and eventually magical things can occur. So,
yeah, it was very
validating.
So
I'm glad to see
yeah.
that. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again for being on the show today. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I know the audience, either live or over time in the podcast, they're enjoying it too. So thank you again, John.
Thank you, Susan. You have a great day.
You too. You take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye now.
Bye. And I'll end the show with just a couple of notes for those of you listening in the podcast. We do have two more shows coming up this week. On Thursday, September 12th at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, Jack Armstrong, the author of Lessons from the Source, very inspiring individual. He's done a lot of things in his life, even ran for Congress, different things. He's very interesting. He's an actor. He had a guest part on Leverage not too long ago. So anyway, Jack Armstrong will be on the show Thursday, September 12th at 12 noon Pacific. And then we've got two shows in a row, actually. Friday, September 13th, Friday the 13th, we've got a show, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda Starwolf is returning. She runs a retreat center on the East Coast. She's known for her shamanic wisdom. She also has a Ph.D., and she's going to talk about the spirituality and the wisdom of the wolf. What does the wolf totem and energy convey to us? So that should be a very interesting show. And that will be Friday, September 13th, again, at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And I do want to encourage you, if you'd like to learn more about this program, go to frontierbeyondfear.com. It is, once again, as I said to John, the intent of this show to simply explore things with an open mind. Not, again, nobody's asking you to believe things that perhaps don't resonate. That's okay. The whole idea here is to just explore and to listen to the different ideas that are in our world. And you know, people like John are creatively exploring these things and really are being affirmed by, in his case, the entertainment industry, which really sees the value of this kind of inspiration that calls us to a higher place in the way that we go about our lives and the way that we think about our world, because it's really easy, this being a show about fear. We all fall into fear sometimes. I am not immune to fear, even though I have a show about fear. And when we allow ourselves to be opened up to new things and to be inspired, we find that the fear, the voice of fear, begins to diminish in our hearts. And it just empowers us to live such a much more fulfilling and open life, to where we're openly curious about a lot of things. So thank you again, everyone, for being here today. And I hope that's where this show leaves you today, really being open and curious about things that perhaps you haven't really thought about. And that's exactly where I'd like you to be. So you all have a wonderful day. no matter where it is that you're listening to today's show or when. And I look forward to seeing you next time.